This is the Breaker.News podcast for July 8th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines about the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines about the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature, with sports economist Victor Matheson on the dollars and sometimes nonsense about big-ticket mega events and pro sports venues. And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to people who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is that small minority of people wasting its time by slamming the NDP for not caving in to FIFA's demands for the United 2026 World Cup bid? People, the toothpaste is out of the tube. It's not going back in. But keep your fingers crossed and maybe we'll see some training camps and pre-tournament friendlies in Vancouver in 2026. We still may benefit. CONCACAF President Vic Montalbano of West Vancouver stirred the pot with his trademark hyperbole. In an interview with the Toronto Sun, he ranted against Premier John Horgan and the NDP. This is the man who was paid $2 million in 2017, and he didn't sound very diplomatic, to say the least. Documents that The Breaker has exclusively obtained show that the United bid rejected the NDP government on March 14th. That was after the CEO of BC Place Stadium pleaded for clarification and pleaded for negotiation on six key legal, financial, and logistical points. Only 3 short years ago, we cannot forget, that FIFA was brought to its knees by a massive corruption scandal. Until we are sure that the suits at FIFA are playing fair and being transparent, our governments must be cautious. Especially the BC NDP government. Citizens, even those who love soccer, should be using their energy instead to press Horgan and company to get on with replacing earthquake-prone St. Paul's Hospital, and to get on with stopping corruption and organized crime in this province. Playing hardball with FIFA was a step in the right direction to a better BC, but only a baby step. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Audrey Jiajia Li reports, from Singapore to the U.S., overseas Chinese are increasingly fearful of criticizing Beijing. Is this what China wants? Li's harrowing experience of being shouted down by a fellow Chinese for her negative views of China at a recent conference in Singapore reflect a disturbing trend of Chinese abroad being spied on, reported, and vilified for their critical views of their home country. After the panel, dozens of international journalists came over to offer comfort and encouragement. Many were concerned about my safety, Li reports, as the professor had apparently come to the conference under the arrangement of a government-controlled organization. These kind of Orwellian-style scenes may be common in China nowadays. Over the past couple of years, students have snitched on several professors for, quote, improper discussions, and the professors ended up losing their jobs. Bloggers critical of the government have been reported on and had their content censored. Some were even interrogated. But what is more intimidating now is that, even overseas, no matter how far away, you feel you are still being watched. Educators and speakers in the West have been controlled by a growing number of Chinese students over discussions on China-related topics that do not fit China's official narrative. In El Universal, Morena political party to govern 56 million Mexicans. In 2015, the Morena political party participated at a federal election for the first time when it received over 3.3 million votes and gained the victory of 35 federal deputies. This year, Morena has won the governorship of 5 entities: Veracruz, Chiapas, Morelos, Tabasco, and Mexico City. It also won 252 municipalities across the country. The country has complex challenges ahead. Scarce economic growth, organizations in which insecurity, corruption, human rights violations, among other things, prevail. Andres Manuel López Obrador, former Mexico City mayor, is the new president of Mexico. In the Star Online, Najib's trial, a step toward transparency and justice, says report. Former Prime Minister of Malaysia Najib Razak's arrest and subsequent trial is a step toward transparency and justice, said American Daily, The Washington Post, in an opinion article. In many countries, the arrest of a former government leader less than 2 months after his loss in an election would be evidence of political persecution. In Malaysia, however, the arrest and brief detention of former Prime Minister Najib Razak in a multi-billion dollar corruption probe was an important step towards transparency and justice, said the Post. The 1MDB fund was established in 2009 to strengthen the economy, but was implicated in reports of money laundering when it missed payments to banks and bondholders in 2015. Last year, the U.S. Justice Department alleged that at least $4.5 billion U.S. dollars had been siphoned from the fund, including $733 million U.S. dollars that reportedly ended up in Najib's personal accounts. That's Around the Rim for this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Seattle Times, Nina Shapiro reports, under pressure, afraid to take bathroom breaks, inside Amazon's fast-paced warehouse world. Hired 6 months undercover in low wage, author James Bloodworth said he spent several weeks at Amazon in early 2016 working the requisite 10-hour shifts 4 days a week at a warehouse in the West Midlands countryside. Seeking to write about the plight of the working class, he also worked at a call center, as an Uber driver, on a building site, and as a home aide caring for the elderly. Amazon was the worst employer, easily, the author said by phone. When he took a day off sick, he received a point. Earn 6 points and you're fired, he said. The company has not released worldwide employment figures, but said it has 175 fulfillment centers, as it calls its massive warehouses, where goods come in and out, and 35 smaller sortation centers that finish off the delivery process. As he tells it, urinating into a bottle is the kind of desperation Amazon forces its warehouse workers into as they try to avoid accusations of idling and failing to meet impossibly high production targets, ones they are continually measured against by Big Brother-ish type surveillance. It didn't help that the nearest bathroom to where he worked was 4 flights of stairs below. In the Haida Gwaii Observer, Andrew Hudson reports, delayed BC Ferries passengers get time for cake and time to eat it, too. Don Ann Schneider got held up for hours at the Rupert Terminal on July 1st and again on July 3rd until a technician finally flew in from Miami and replaced some faulty fire detection gear on the Northern Adventure. By 10 a.m. Sunday, when the Haida Gwaii ferry should have sailed, Schneider said BC Ferries staff were handing out bowls of apples, bananas, and oranges to the hundreds stuck in the terminal lot. That sailing and the following one were fully booked. After the fruit came coffee, water, and apologies. By the middle of the day, there were sandwiches and a great big Canada Day cake, said Schneider, laughing. The Northern Adventure finally set sail the night of Tuesday, July 3rd, after another 4-hour snack-fueled delay at the Prince Rupert Terminal. The next morning, Schneider finally arrived on island after a month away. Just not the right one. On Coin TV, Lisa Ballack reports, half of Umsville City Council appears out after recall. Half of Umsville's City Council in Oregon appears to have been voted out after local residents, upset over a new tax, petitioned for a recall. The petition from residents was sparked after the city council decided to add a monthly $12 fee attached to everyone's sewer and water bill. That money was used to help pay for 24/7 police coverage. Derek Clevenger, the man who led the petition, said it's not personal, but he thinks the tax should have been put to public vote and a separate fee. And the Breaker.News brought you these headlines this week. Homeless Burnaby Legion sues real estate lawyer over redevelopment fiasco. Royal Canadian Legion 148 is blaming McMillan lawyer Anthony Knight after its deal with developer EPTA fell apart and left war veterans with a vacant lot and nowhere to meet. Also, costs rose for UBC's NDP-inspired ad campaign. The University of British Columbia spent $1.5 million on a blitz that recycled the NDP's Better BC slogan. Read the stories behind the headlines only in the Breaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. The 93rd Annual Western Economic Association International Conference came to the Sheraton Wall Center in Vancouver in the last week of June. More than 2,000 people from 71 countries participated at the discussion of the latest in economic research. For example, sports economists presented research showing how a new stadium can harm real estate values, how the public subsidizes security costs for professional sports venues, and why the Rio 2016 Summer Olympics were not a tourism bonanza for Brazil. The Breaker sat down and interviewed sports economist Victor Matheson from College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts to talk about trends, including the 2018 World Cup. We're told a lot that sports is an economic driver and there's these big booms, but sometimes they turn out to be boondoggles.
Yeah, so what we have here in particular Vancouver, we have actually a real concentration of sports economists, and there's about 50 of us here who at least do some of our research in the area of sports. One of those areas that a lot of research has been done on is whether sports teams and sports venues or big events like the like Vancouver's Winter Olympics a few years ago, whether those are big economic drivers. And the reason that's a really interesting topic for economists is because very often teams get direct or indirect subsidies from cities and states or provinces. Money is spent from taxpayer money to build stadiums. And of course, there was a huge public spending on, you know, hosting big events. We talked about the Summer Olympics and the World Cup here, but obviously a bunch of provincial money spent on the Vancouver Games back in 2010. And obviously that sort of thinking was involved with Vancouver's decision not to participate in the upcoming 2026 World Cup, where Canada will host some games, but not in Vancouver.
We're also seeing next door in Alberta, Calgary is getting ready for its bid for the 2026 Winter Olympics, and down the I-5 in Seattle, the Key Arena is being renovated for NHL. They're waiting to get that confirmed, the franchise, and then hopefully NBA. So what should people in Calgary and Seattle be asking their city fathers and mothers?
So I think the story that most economists would have is, first of all, don't believe a good story, especially if the people telling the story have some incentive to tell you a little bit better story than is the reality, right? So if you're a person who is going to be receiving subsidy money, that's probably a person you shouldn't necessarily believe when they say, oh yeah, hand a bunch of money to me and we will all get rich. That's something you probably you want to take with a grain of salt. In terms of Seattle, I don't think any economist is particularly concerned about that redevelopment project because that's an arena somewhat unique in North America, that all that money on that arena is being spent is private money. And, you know, I think most economists think government should kind of get out of the way as much as possible and when people want to invest their own money in their own businesses. But the bar for government stepping in and subsidizing a team with a new stadium, with a sweetheart lease or things like this, then that should be a pretty high bar for events and teams to clear. And I think most economists think that generally that bar isn't cleared most of the time, and that sports is fun, and if you want to subsidize it because it's a good time and a good party, that's not a problem. But if you think you should subsidize sports because it makes everyone in the community richer in a monetary sense, that hasn't held up most of the time in the data.
And one of the choices that was made in Seattle was the site, either build a new arena, which was mostly privately financed, near the Portlands, which are also near the existing Safeco Field and CenturyLink Field, versus the Seattle Center site, which was renovating the old Key Arena. There was that political friction between the sports boosters and the Port Authority. And the Port Authority, of course, brings in billions of dollars of economic activity and is a major driver, very competitive also with ports here in Vancouver and up and down the coast.
Yeah, so one of the problems with sports in particular is these venues aren't used very often, right? Consider a typical NFL stadium. You know, that's something that's used 8 times a year, 10 times a year. And you might say, well, what about concerts? What about all these other things? Well, there's just not many things that come through a town that require a big 75,000-seat stadium. So you get stadiums that you spend millions of dollars on that you don't use very often. Arenas are probably a little better deal because there's a lot more use for a 15,000 seat enclosed indoor arena. You can play 41 hockey games there a year, plus maybe another 41 basketball games, plus lots more concerts come through that you can plausibly sell 10,000 tickets to than come through that you can sell 70,000 to. So I think we see arenas are a little bit better deal, but it's also why we see arenas much more oftenly get financed through private money, because a private entity can really make those things work. It's really hard to make a $1 billion stadium, outdoor football stadium that you use 8 times a year. It's really hard to make that pay off.
Mm-hmm. Now, your current research includes analyzing the impacts of the 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil and the 2016 Rio Olympics. Did the people in Brazil come out ahead, or did they deepen their recession by hosting those events?
So almost certainly came out behind. And, of course, one of the big reasons they came out behind is because these were really, really expensive events for Brazil, because they didn't have many of the facilities in place that they needed to either play the games, to host the Olympics and the actual sports venues. Plus, they didn't have their general infrastructure just to accommodate all the tourists either. So these were each about $13 billion events, and it's hard to make that money back in 3 weeks or 8 weeks. In terms of number of people coming in, it turns out they did get a little bit of good luck with the World Cup, because their neighbor, Argentina, made it all the way to the final in 2014, which meant that a ton of extra people came across and spilled across the border in that last week of the tournament to hopefully be in Rio when Argentina was going to play in the championship. But they couldn't have anticipated that ahead of time. It turns out the Olympics, very few people went to the Olympics, maybe an extra 100,000 total visitors. And that's not many extra bodies there, you know, to try to pay off $13 billion of preparation expenses.
Yeah, there definitely were the fears of Zika, which was largely unfounded, but there were the fears of crime. What do you think was the main reason why people stayed away from the Rio Olympics versus the World Cup?
I think number one, and it's not just a Brazil thing, it's that there's only so many people you can fit into a city, even a big city like Rio, that you're pretty capacity constrained, right? You know, Rio only had about 40,000 hotel rooms available. So you're not talking about so many people who can come in. World Cup works a little bit better for a country, because you get to spread out your tourists over, you know, 8, 10, 12. In 2026, it'll be over 16 cities. And that gives you a lot more opportunity to kind of host everyone and find spaces for everyone, without way overbuilding your tourist capacity and then, you know, having all this excess capacity once everyone goes home.
And finally, the big event this summer, in summer 2018, is the Russia World Cup. Do you think that there will be any economic benefit for Russia, or is this World Cup similar to what we saw with the Sochi Olympics, more of a political show for the leadership for Vladimir Putin?
Yeah, so 100% this is a political show. There's no doubt about that. They spent over $5 billion on new stadiums. This is for a league that does not draw as well as MLS. Yet they spent $5 billion on stadiums. These are just not stadiums that are going to be used after the event. and you're talking about billions of dollars of additional spending on top of that. So this is definitely a money loser. On the other hand, you know, fun event for the Russians. I mean, everyone likes to throw a party. But again, that you gotta ask yourself, why are we here? Are we here because we're actually going to get a return on our investment? Or are we here because, you know, it's our turn to host the party? You know, I kind of sometimes talk about, you know, these being weddings, right? No one expects to make money on the wedding, especially not the, you know, the parents of the bride, the parents of the bride and groom. But, you know, that doesn't mean we shouldn't have these things. But let's be realistic about why we have them.
But FIFA will be flying back on its private jets back to Zurich with more money in its pocket after the 2015 corruption scandals.
Well, so that's one of the, you know, kind of terrible things about these is both the Olympics and FIFA, who they really make rich is the IOC and FIFA, right? You know, there's about $4 billion on every four-year cycle in FIFA, and that money doesn't get pocketed by the local organizers. That's FIFA's money, which they share a very, very tiny bit with the host country. Same thing with the IOC. IOC, again, about $4, $5, $6 billion amount of money being made over the four-year cycle, and about maybe a third of that is shared with the local hosts to help defray costs. And of course, that doesn't come anywhere close to what it costs to actually host these events.
That was my interview on June 28th in Vancouver with Victor Matheson, who is a professor from the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts. Matheson visited Vancouver to speak at the 93rd Annual Western Economic Association International Conference. For more information, go to weai.org. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the good citizens who were at the Tawasin Mills Mega Mall on Canada Day, who noticed two young children suffering in a car on the hot, sunny day. First, they tried to get the kids out. Then they called Delta Police, who sent an officer to break a window to rescue the kids. The father is now facing charges. This incident must be a reminder to one and all. Do not leave kids or pets inside a parked car. In a matter of minutes, they could be roasting in 50 Celsius heat, and they could suffer heat stroke or suffocation. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for July 8th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on July 8th in 1947, the Roswell Army Field issued a news release that said a flying disc had been recovered in the New Mexico desert? It sparked decades of fascination with UFOs and suspicions about life beyond Earth. Well, now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. And we leave you with sounds of the 2018 edition of the Catalano Street Party held July 7th on West 4th Avenue in Vancouver. Listen to the Breaker.News podcast next week for more.
They had this thing called Hippie Days, and it was a celebration of the Summer of Love, the 40th anniversary of it. And they ran it 3 years, which it was a bit tired, and I'm glad that they did it. But there was nothing to replace it, and it got canceled. And that's where Catalano started. So you could say frustration is what started it all, because and that, as an independent business, we know a thing or two about local music, and it was like an opportunity to promote this, to promote, like, how do you say, the spirit of 4th Avenue with contemporary bands, and it's, that's lasted 8 years now, and it's been wonderful.